to the World Peace Diet Circle. I'm your course coordinator, Steve Prusak. It's good to be with you. We've got a special guest on today's show. And don't forget, in your membership site, we've got the resources for February 2013. You can go ahead and download them now. And a great evening ahead. It's great to be back. Let's welcome to the call author of the World Peace Diet and head of the course leader, Dr. Will Tuttle.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much. It's really wonderful how you stay on top of things and keep everything rolling here for us, and you have so much to offer. Also, the unfoldment of vegan living on this planet with what you're doing, and I'd like maybe in just a second here to maybe hear a little bit from you, because I just see Veg World magazine growing and the ripples radiating out into the world. But before we jump into that, I want to welcome everyone to the call. Thank you all for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us this evening and for caring enough about animals and the earth and future generations, hungry people, and the whole web of life, really, to be here today. And this is really your time. I always like to emphasize that. This is, you know, our call. It's your time as we're going along. If you have any comments or questions, don't forget you can press star 2 on your phone. If you happen to be listening in on the computer, go ahead and type in your question, and we'll see it, and we will respond. And either way, we'd love to respond and make it an interactive two-way process as much as you would like to. So, as Steve said, we have with us this evening Hope Bohannik, who's actually an old acquaintance of mine. I can't say we're really friends in the sense of longtime friends, but we go back together since I lived in Healdsburg way back in the 90s, and Hope was one of the founders of SPAR, Sonoma People for Animal Rights, which was going there and has kind of evolved into another group, Compassionate Living Outreach, and I've given quite a few talks for them over the last few years. She's a great animal rights activist and an author of a new book, too, so it's great to have her with us for a little while here in the beginning. And also, I just want to take a minute here to just invite all of us as we begin our time together. It always seems to me that it sort of flies by very quickly, and to take a moment and just connect with each other in the consciousness of compassion and freedom and peace and healing and abundance, because I think all of these are interconnected and really at the foundation of what we're all about here with the World Peace Diet and the vegan lifestyle, which is basically awakening from the cultural trance of domination and exploitation of other living beings and doing the best we can to question the official stories and to allow our lives to be in alignment with our values and to encourage others to do the same thing and to find ways to help bring this message to our society and also to thrive in our own lives. So let's just take a moment and connect with each other in that consciousness with everyone who's here on this call. There will also be quite a few people who are members of the circle who will be listening to the recording of the call probably later tomorrow, or if they can't make it tonight, or if they live in other parts of the world that where they're sleeping right now probably. So we just connect with everyone, and let's connect with all of our loved ones also in consciousness, everyone that we care about personally, and also let's connect also with the entire web of other human beings who are working to help spread this message, to live this message in really thousands and millions of different ways. There's so much good work happening, actually, in the world by dedicated people. The efforts and endeavors that we're a part of are really, I think, noble and vast. And so just to remember that there's a whole movement that we're part of that is not only unfolding now, but has been unfolding, really, for decades, for centuries, really, I think, for thousands of years, to free ourselves from these delusions. So we just feel our connection with all these wonderful beings, with the animals, with the celebration of life here, with this beautiful earth, and with the future that is beckoning, the future that is calling us forward so that we can fulfill our full potential here on this beautiful earth. So we give thanks for each other, for all of the other kindred spirits. Some people call them vegan warriors. I'm not sure if I like the warrior word, but if I understand what it's saying, the idea that we're willing to question and make an effort to do something that's in a way going against everything in our culture in many ways, but also in alignment with the larger unfolding. So we give thanks for this whole opportunity of a human life and this opportunity we have specifically here this evening. Thank you all for joining us. And before we go on, I'd like to maybe take just a minute and hear from Steve briefly before we introduce our special guest, Hope, because Steve, as I was saying, has been doing wonderful work with founding a magazine online and all of that new technology empowers us to do. So, Steve, how's it going with Veg World Magazine in the last month, since we heard from you last month?
Thanks, Will. Yeah, because, I mean, it got to a point with this magazine where it was overwhelming how much work it was. I remember I was sending you emails and saying, Will, what do I do? This is crazy. But
right.
It really feels like it's paying off, and it's become a flow, and the magazine has really excited in the last week. I think it's been 7 days now that in Apple's iTunes in the newsstand, if you go in there and you look under the magazines, they have them by topic and by the health, mind, and body topic, which is what we're listed in. We've been the number one What's Hot magazine, number one. And that's like with all the other health magazines that have been in existence for years, and we're listed above them.
Oh.
Yeah, it's been – and today we're at number 9 on the top grossing magazine in that category. So there's clearly a need for this information that we're talking about on these calls, and I mean, really,
mm-hmm.
Vegan Palooza, all the work we've done on that and getting these messages out and developing a magazine into that format, and people are loving it. We look at the reviews, and it's just – It makes the work worthwhile, all the hours we put into putting
mm-hmm.
out this kind of magazine. I don't think there's any other vegan magazine out there like it.
Right, and you do this a lot with your wife, right, with Julie.
Yeah, I mean, we have some help now with it, and primarily it's she and I that put it together every month, and all our amazing
right.
contributors like you, and each month we have more people joining the team of vegan authors, chefs, businesses that just want to get involved with being in the magazine and that kind of thing. So it's organically growing in that way and becoming incredible, and it's really going to be a full-time business in no time at this point. I have other things I'm doing, but this is really going to be a big part of everything I do. I mean, it already is at this point. So, I mean, if anyone's on the call, I was going to offer, if anyone's interested, not in creating the same thing we're doing, but in this realm, like an animal rights magazine or something related, even just a vegan, in a particular niche, we're not looking to create a competition of what we're doing, but it's clear that there's other areas that someone on the call might be interested in producing some kind of magazine in a passion of
right.
yours. And if that is the case, you can email me, and maybe I can do some consulting with you and, give you the steps to do what we've done. It clearly pays off if you're trying to do this as a full-time job. I mean, you're going to get to that point. This is one avenue to get there.
Right. Yeah, that's one of our sub-themes, I think, in the whole World Peace Diet Facilitator Training and Mastery Program and
mm-hmm.
The work that you're doing, Steve, too, is that we can – hopefully free ourselves eventually from having to work in a job just for money that isn't something we really love to do, and actually spend our time doing something that fulfills us at a deep level, like spreading the vegan message, which to me is such a wonderful way to spend my days and to find ways to get reimbursed for that. There's so many different ways. It means, in many ways, being creative and like you're doing, Steve, just sort of creating a niche and then suddenly you find it opens up and people's interests begin to coincide and pretty soon even funding begins to flow. But the beginning of it really is, in a sense, volunteering, just saying I want to do this, and just doing it out of love. And then very often out of that comes something that's actually going to be paying the bills, which today, you know, is an important thing, I think. So it's an inspiration to see what you're doing, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, I mean, clearly this is the future of technology and people, how they're going to access magazines. U.S. News and World Report are going completely digital. They're not going to be having a print magazine anymore, and it's just really going to be the new trend in how people read magazines. So to get in now, and to think you can have your own magazine and not need a huge staff and office building like it used to be is pretty amazing, too. I mean,
right.
You know, your dad worked in this industry for years, right?
Oh, yeah. I was raised in the publishing business. My father started out when I was a kid. He bought a newspaper. And by the time I was in college, he had a chain of 13 newspapers and a plant he built and hundreds of employees and was a whole, and I was supposed to inherit the whole thing. I was the oldest child, but you know, I could see it was kind of what you're saying. It was like a lot of work that I was, in a way, taking me away from what I felt was my spiritual calling. But I know the power, just the sheer power of having a newspaper or a magazine in terms of being able to just create conversations in the community and be a force. It's just enormous. I mean, it really is. And with the internet revolution, basically, we all have that power now. So it's just a matter of publishing our own, creating our own publishing venue of some kind, and there's lots of ways to do it. There's lots of little niches I can think of, Steve, really. Like, you know, there's people who are into animal, you know, animal sanctuaries. You could, you know, that could be a magazine, or animal, different types of, you know, people are doing animal massage and just all kinds of different things. So I would think is this something you can start exploring in different ways? Yeah.
So if anyone has any questions on it, feel free to email me and see, you know, with your idea, and I can see if I could help you. And you mentioned the animal sanctuaries, and I was thinking Pat Derby passed away last week. Did you hear about that from Paws?
Yes, I just heard that. I just heard about that, I think, today. Yeah, she was a real long-time, dedicated, wonderful animal rights activist that just really gave her life to help make the lives better for so many animals. And these are the wonderful people that we've had to work with. Yeah,
right.
Thanks, Steve. Did you know her too at all? Or?
Well, we featured Paws in, I think, issue 3. We're going on issue 8 now, if you can believe it. We're almost coming up to a year. It's crazy. So, okay, that's
great.
The update on VegWorld, and it's true. Like Dr. Tuttle said, it's to have the opportunity to live your passion, doing what you love, spreading the vegan message and compassion and wrapping it all into a career. There, I mean, really, once you get into alignment with that, and I worked as a therapist for 10 years, and I mean, somehow, even though I was working with autistic children, I knew I wanted to do more, and it just I wasn't able to spread the vegan message there because I was really edited what I could say in the school districts, because then, you know, it caused controversy if I mentioned something. So to do, you know, to be able to communicate what you love, is there's nothing like this, really.
Right. Great, Steve. That's absolutely important to remember all that, and it's fantastic that you're proceeding so well. So thanks so much for being with us. It's great.
Thank you, Will.
Really appreciate it today. And I wanted to just before we introduce Hope, I noticed from the very, since before the call actually started, our friend Terry in Honolulu, in Hawaii, you've had your hand up. So could you go ahead and just say if something's on your mind? I'd be happy to hear what it is, and then I'll
Aloha, Will.
Aloha. Aloha.
Oh, I just, before you start your wonderful program, I just am busting to say thank you so very, 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 very much for the beautiful article that you wrote entitled, What Are the Roots of Freedom and Slavery? I'm almost in tears now because it spoke to me, every word spoke to me at a crucial climactic time and torn time I am in. Find myself in my allegiance to being vegan and the animals and to, I guess, the stark realization of the way our world is going and feeling really like I'm on an island here. Well, I guess I am.
Yeah.
And that with all its beauty. But I just, when I just read each word over and over again, I sent it to all my people, my support group. I have a vegan support group. It just, if I only had to send one message out to anyone that epitomizes exactly what I feel right now about everything, it would be this article that you wrote. And I want to thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for saying that. And I know you and I have been in touch a little bit on some of these issues. And so maybe after we have our time with Hope, we can go into this some of these ideas a little bit more in depth if you'd like.
Sure.
But I think that would be great. Yeah, we can do it a little bit. But thanks so much. Thanks so much, Terry. It's so good.
Thank you for you. And it's just, I look to you as I'm learning to be more in balance and to accept and be open. And it's a struggle for me. You're the master, Bill.
Well,
I'm the impatient.
It's not easy,
and I'm the little child that's kind of like so I look to you, and you just do that. You have a magical way of calming and putting in balance what is, and it's beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Now let's start. We can talk more about some of these ideas. I'd like to go ahead now and introduce Hope. Hope Bohannik, as you all know, because we send a bio out to everybody, short some biographical information, but just briefly to sort of capsulize everything here, the thing that I think is really wonderful, Hope is a longtime animal rights activist, as I mentioned, going back here in Sonoma County in Santa Rosa, and she's just finished writing a book she's been working hard on, I know for at least a year, called The Ultimate Betrayal, and I think it's a very important book. And she sent me some of the some of the chapters, and I've had a chance to look it over. The subtitle is "Is There Happy Meat?" And I think this is a very important question because we see a lot of that, especially if we go to Whole Foods and other places. And so it's great to have Hope joining us for a little while here on our call, and we really appreciate her taking time out of her busy schedule to be with us. As you know, she's also was the director at In Defense of Animals of the grassroots campaigns, and she worked hard also with the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to pass the Veg Day resolution, and as I mentioned, also is the co-founder of the Compassionate Living Outreach group here within Sonoma County, which is Madeline and I are now in Lake County, which is just like one county north of Sonoma County. And so it's really wonderful. I've, when we're in this area, I quite often work with this local animal rights compassionate living outreach group to put on events and things. So I'm delighted to have with us on the call Hope Bohannik, and I hope your phone is unmuted. So welcome to the call. Welcome to the group.
Oh, thank you, Will. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, you know, I think it would be just fantastic if we could start out here with, if you could tell everyone a little bit about what are some of the main ideas in your new book, The Ultimate Betrayal? What is the title significant of, and what is the main, you know, some of the main ideas, the main message you're bringing to the world with your book?
Sure, absolutely. First, just a quick clarification. In your first introduction of me a while back, you said that I was one of the founders of SPAR, and I just want to be clear that I actually didn't found SPAR, Sonoma People for Animal Rights, which was incredibly active back in the 90s. It was founded in the 80s, before I was even in the county, by Larry Weiss and Dion Hardy and a few others. So I just kind of took it on in the 90s and was definitely one of the, you know, main players. But I just wanted to be clear that I didn't found SPAR. So just, you know, credit where credit's due. So, anyway, yes, getting into my book. So it's called The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat? And, you know, the title, of course, helps you realize what the focus is, which is debunking the, you know, the myths and the misconceptions around all these new labels that are coming out with the free range and cage free and grass fed and all of this, you know, marketing that's happening that's supposedly a new way of farming animals. And I wrote this book, well, being here in the Bay Area in, you know, Sonoma County being close to San Francisco, Berkeley, this whole area is kind of a hotbed for this new, you know, new method of farming with, you know, the local movement, the slow food movement, all of this. And I found myself in conversation with people, and they would often say, oh, well, I buy free-range eggs. I buy organic meat. And it was almost like they were shutting down the conversation at that point. Like they were justified. They were like, okay, that's, you know, I'm doing my part now, right? And I realized that that this just, it really needed to be addressed. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I definitely don't put myself in any box, but I'm also not what you would call maybe a Francione abolitionist. I don't want to, you know, there's an unfortunate chasm of happening, you know, in animal rights and this very polarization happening and you know, and so I do support legislation for, you know, getting the animals out of the cages, out of the crates, these kinds of things. But I think that side, the incrementalist, if you want to call it that, or whatever, you know, I don't like all the labels, but, the side that supports this legislation, I think something is happening where they've put so much focus on the factory farming, on the misery of factory farming, the suffering of the animals in factory farming, and rightly so, you know, of course. I mean, these animals are suffering, and it is something that we need to talk about and bring to light. But I'm afraid that the conversation has stopped there, or the message has stopped there. And so people are now feeling like, okay, well, they're not on factory farms now. Look, this is a small farm. Look, this is an organic farm. You know, so it's okay now, right? It's okay for me to eat the eggs. It's okay for me to eat the meat. So what in my book, it's twofold, what I focus on, what I try to expose. One is really focusing in on all those different labels. I get very specific on what it means to be cage-free, what it means to be free-range, and what that really looks like, and all the inherent cruelties that still exist in those industries and those animals still endure. Even though they may be out of a cage, there are so many other things that, you know, are unfortunately still present in the farming practice, as well as their death. And that's where the ultimate betrayal comes in. This is, I think, what we have to start talking about now, louder than just the misery of the factory farms, that we have no right to kill these animals, no matter what kind of a life they had. That is, it is their inherent right to live and live free, of human-imposed suffering, and it is the ultimate betrayal to kill them for our own purposes. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I'm going for in the book. I, of course, focus on the ethical first, and which I feel is absolutely most important. I do get into the environmental and health aspects of these new supposedly alternative ways of farming, which has been very interesting. I mean, I really learned so much through this process. And I think people are going to be really surprised at what I've found. For instance, environmentally, grass-fed beef actually produces more greenhouse gases than factory-farmed or CAFO beef. Yeah. I mean, it's just fascinating. It's like here I thought going in that I was going to find that, it's all just a little better, But, of course, eating plant-based, you can do so much more for your carbon footprint, to reduce your carbon footprint. But it turns out that some of these things are even worse.
Right.
It's like, oh my God. So it's been a really fascinating journey.
So the actual act of writing the book was an education for you, and the beauty of it is you can educate other people through with your education plus what you learned as you did more research into Nyman Ranch and what they do and all these other different so-called small-scale factory, non-factory farm, but local organic operators. I don't know if you get into this, but one of the things that I would just sort of, it just sort of seems interesting to me, and it goes along with your idea of the ultimate betrayal, is that it seems to me that when you have a situation where the animals are being absolutely horribly treated from the day they're born, as is the case from pretty much all of the hatcheries and so forth that animals have to endure, for birds and then also for mammals and for fish too that are factory farmed, but then especially for mammals, and I say mammals and birds, when they're find themselves on a small scale operation, they can still be, and virtually usually are, experiencing a lot of abuse of various kinds, which we could talk about what it is. I mean, just being owned and being confined in itself is a form of abuse. But I guess the point is, if they are those, as some small farmers say, oh, I just love my animals. I care for them. I go out in the night if I need to make sure that they're okay or whatever. If you have these kind of small-scale operations where people really feel that if they're morally obligated to buy the eggs and the dairy and the meat from these farms because the people are so good to their animals, it's almost you've got to support them, And yet what you're saying is to actually then kill these animals, it's almost, to me, it seems like it's almost a more horrible thing to do because they don't expect this kind of treatment. I mean, if they've been somewhat treated well, in quotes, and then suddenly turn around and find themselves, their throats being slashed by this very same person who was treating them so well, it's almost a betrayal, not only a betrayal, an enormous betrayal of the animals, but then I also think what an enormous betrayal it is to the person's own true nature. The person has to live that kind of a split. It's very bizarre. I mean, if you have somebody who's running a factory farm, they're basically just absolutely treating the animals like commodities, and so you expect they're going to kill them like they're a commodity. But when somebody is, in a sense, working to show some compassion for these animals and then turns around and slits their throats, I would think, to me, it seems like there's a very deep wound. I mean, there's wounds in all of this. I think in the cold cruelty of being a factory farm operator is obviously terribly devastating to a person, I think. But this kind of thing almost seems like, you know, on some level, to be even worse because it's so weird that our society would actually hold these people up as moral and ethical when we look at what they're actually doing. It's almost the most hideous possible thing you can imagine.
What you're describing, you know, where they actually treat the animals with some modicum of care and love, it's so rare. Even in these small scale, organic, whatever it is, you know, when I was researching, usually the majority of, like, for instance, cage-free eggs, they are still coming from factory farms where there's a row of battery cage hens, and then right next door are the cage-free hens. And they got the same workers and the same facility. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of what you're describing. Mostly the same workers, same, even in some of the very small, and I, you know, have it in my book, some of the very small, operations with, they'll only have maybe 300 animals. There's still a real culture of violence and using fear and manipulation to get the animals to do what you want them to do and all that. So what you're describing is very, very rare. But it's interesting because I had a whole section of the book that dealt with that. We did a lot of research. My husband helped me with this aspect of it. He's a co-author on the book. And we researched about the psychology behind the perpetrator of betrayal, like someone who has betrayed someone, and what that can do to you, and how that can really, really mess you up. And I had a whole section, actually, that it's called the perpetrator effect, and someone can hold a great deal of guilt, a great deal of horrible negative emotion around being a betrayer. So unfortunately, I cut that section out of the book. It was just, you know, I mean, I had probably 250 pages that I wanted to cut down to about 150. I didn't want the book to be so much of a mouthful for people, you know. I wanted it to be an easy read and an easy chew. But so that's one aspect I did cut out. But yeah, it's very, very interesting. It absolutely is. Yeah.
Wow.
It was very sad hearing. I mean, I talked to undercover investigators and just workers that had worked in small scale family farms, organic, you know, local, all of that. And the stories are the same. You hear the same thing you hear about the factory farming. Most of the same inherent cruelties are still there, the debeaking, the, you know, taking the babies away from the mothers right at birth for dairy. All those things are still present. It's so, you know, the difference is so minimal, you know. And granted, though, if you do have an animal out of the cage, that can be significant. I mean, that is a significant change. You know, the most misery, most miserable to be confined so terribly. So, yes, that's a step, but it's far from perfect. It's far from a good life. You know, with all these other inherent cruelties involved. So, yeah.
Right. So they can get more money, obviously, for their products too. That's very
absolutely
behind it.
Absolutely. And that's when I was talking about how there's you know, these industries, they'll have their regular factory farming in one building, and then the next building is their cage-free, and then the next building, you know, they may have free range, or, you know, they've got different stages because they know now that there are buyers out there that will pay more money for that label. So now they've got a variety of ways to make money, but you're just still feeding the same industry money, you know.
Wow. Well, thanks. We're talking with Hope Bohanic, as you all know, who's written this wonderful book. I think it's really an excellent book from what I've seen, The Ultimate Betrayal. And I was just—it sounds like one of the main contributions you've made, really, with the book is simply to, in a sense, debunk the myth that small local small local farms are significant improvements for animals' experience of life. And what you really found out is it's still enormous cruelty, and they're still killed, which is the ultimate.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going
to
say.
I just wanted to say to people. I just want to encourage everyone to press star 2 if you have a question for Hope. I'm going to wrap this up in another 10 minutes or so. So if you have a question for Hope, please press star 2 or any comment about what we're saying here. I think this is an extremely important subject because this is one of the primary ways that the whole movement to continue eating animal foods is pushing back is by saying, oh, no, we can do it this way. So I think it's really wonderful that you've done this book. And go ahead. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you there.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just going to let everyone know that the book will be out in June, hopefully. Uh-huh. That's the tentative release month. We don't have an exact date yet. And I could give out the website if anybody's interested, because I do have a website up with further information.
Oh, yeah.
And,
do that.
Yeah, it's the-ultimate-betrayal.com. So just the ultimate betrayal with dashes in between the words. the-ultimate-betrayal.com.
Excellent.
And I feature several animals in the book, throughout the book. Their personal stories are dotted throughout the book. I was able to go to farm sanctuary as well as animal place. And, and when we think about these animals that are at these sanctuaries, often we think they come from, the worst of the worst of factory farming, but it was really interesting to find out that, a lot of them came from small-scale operations. So I got to hear their stories. Yeah, I got to hear their stories, and I, told their stories in the book, and you can see their pictures on the website. And
Wow. And there's a lot, because what you were saying, I think, in the book is that these animals that end up at sanctuaries experience some pretty horrible cruelty at these small operations. That's, I guess, one of the reasons that they ended up there. So a neighbor found out about it or reported them or something like that. And they were able to.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen, in fact.
One that comes to mind is Ruby, a pig, a little pig. She's not little anymore. She was little when she got to the sanctuary, but she's big now. But she was from a free-range, like pasture-raised meat pig operation, and they were so, groovy alternative that they would actually give tours, which is so rare, because even on these small-scale farms, they don't want anyone there. And I actually tried to get access to some of the farms and couldn't to go. But anyway, so this one time, there was a group going out on a tour of the farm, and there was a little tiny piglet that was a runt. And they killed the runts, because sometimes this is a common occurrence. If you saw Babe, Babe was a runt and was going to be killed. And they kill the small ones of the litter because they may not grow big enough to make a profit. So they were actually going to possibly thump her, which is just throwing her against the wall or throwing her on the ground to knock her head and kill her. And someone who was on the tour was just horrified and asked if they could take her, and they let her take Ruby, and Ruby ended up at Animal Place. But, these stories are just heartbreaking, and I just can't believe that they're, that this is what people think is now okay. I mean, they have no idea what these labels truly mean.
Right, exactly. Yeah, people just don't know. And that's the main thing. The other thing, a good thing I think it's always helpful to remember is the fact that we, if you just go back to people, like I always think of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity, who were actually vegans and were trying to encourage people to not eat meat and dairy. This was back in the good old days when it was only small farms. This was, 120 years ago or whatever. And they were appalled at the cruelty to animals back then. But the same with many of the, Tolstoy and just a lot, if you just read, if you do some research and you go back before factory farms, you find, many people appalled at the horrific cruelty to animals for food back before we had factory farms. So this has been something that's been going on for ever since we started owning animals as property and killing them for food. There's been this cruelty that's been going on. Obviously, with factory farms, we sort of multiply it with scientific technology that in some ways makes it just ridiculously horrific. But it's still, before that, there was a huge movement, it always has been, of people who are ethically opposed to the violence towards animals that's always required to eat them.
Sure.
So is there anything else before we wrap up that you'd like to talk about, Hope, before we go? I know we have another maybe 5 minutes or so, and I don't see anybody raising their hand, even though a lot of people are listening in, but I think everybody's just probably fascinated by hearing what you have to say. So is there any other things you want to mention, any either speaking engagements that you're having or any other issues within the movement that you think would be good to address or whatever? So we'd just love to hear a little bit more from your years of wisdom in the movement.
Sure. Well, I think that what I said at the beginning, I'd just like to reiterate in that I do feel that it is an important message, the factory farming message and the misery that animals endure there. I think that is an important message on a broader scale. But I think that now we need to start shifting that message, especially for those that are hearing the first message, and that are like, yeah, that's terrible. I don't want to be part of this, of hurting these animals. Those people now need to hear the whole message, which is we should not kill animals no matter what, that animals deserve to live free of our, of our needs and wants and desires and economics and whatever. They shouldn't be part of that, no matter how they're treated.
The most important thing to do then is to focus on vegan education as opposed to legislation that would improve the lives of animals?
We need both. I think we need both.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, I think that it is still important to move that legislation through, those animals that are getting out of the gestation crates, that are getting out of the battery cages, it means a lot to them. It is meaningful to them, and it does make a difference in their lives. And I do believe that it's moving. I think all of this is moving us in the right direction. I think that this is actually, this whole movement that I am so opposed to and so speaking out against, the free range, organic, all this. I think that it's wonderful. I really do. Because it's the beginnings of the acknowledgement that these animals suffer, that these animals deserve to live free. It's a great step. It is a step in the right direction. And it's that acknowledgement of their sentience. It's that acknowledgement of their suffering. And if we follow this through, we just keep on going with it, the logical extension of this thinking is that we should not kill them. That we should let them live. So I think that it's all been working the way it's supposed to. But I do feel that the legislative folks have gotten really focused. And that's good. That's good. They've got a good focus. But at the same time, I'm afraid that they're overlooking something that is inherent in the message. They're so focused on the crate and the cage. They're so focused on the factory farm that once they've won that, where do you go? I mean, I think that people will be like, oh, okay, great. We did what you wanted us to do. They're out of the cages now. We can eat it, right? And that follow-through message has to be there.
And that's what your book is doing in many ways. It's showing that's ultimately a dead end, actually, in terms this cruelty is endemic into the whole system. Great. All right. Well, we do have somebody with a hand up, so I'll go ahead and we can hear from in Oceanside, California. I'm not sure your name exactly, but
Hi.
Go ahead. Do you have a question
Hi.
For Hope or a comment? Uh-huh.
Yes. Hi, Will. It's Jeanette Von Gunten. How are you?
Hi, Jeanette. Good. Good. Good to have you with us.
Yeah. This is fascinating, and so much recently, my conversations with people tie into this exact thing, and also the vegetarian vegan as well. But Hope,
right.
I'm surprised that you have people saying to you, now we can eat them right, with that question mark right at the end. Because I don't see that. I see a solid thing that they think they're doing fine now. There's no question about it. Well, I eat free range. And I just went to some spiritual thing, and they had a vegetarian cafeteria there, not a vegan one. And when I brought things up, it's like, dairy is fine because the cows aren't killed. It wasn't right. It was just they thought they were right, you know, and I tried to talk to them and pull things from your book, Will, and, you know, talked about how long dairy cows live and, you know, shortening their lives and the miserable lives. They were just so comfortable in their trance that they're doing fine. So my question is, where would you start? I mean, what would you, for the vegetarian vegan one and this, you know, I eat free range. Where would you start if I'm talking to somebody?
Well, what I usually do is I thank them for caring. You know, I say, wow, that's awesome that you care. You know, so you heard about factory farming and how horrible it is for the animals, and you're trying to do something about it. That's really, really great. Unfortunately, you're being pulled into a marketing scheme to sell products.
Yeah.
And it is no better, you know, there may be a slight difference, but truly the overall picture is just as bad as a regular bought egg or chicken or whatever it is, you know. So that's kind of how I approach it. I try to thank them, really, and show them that that's great that they are trying and that they care. To kind of let them know they're being duped, you know,
that it's not true.
Good way. Right. I think that's excellent. Thank you so much for the question, Jen. And thank you, Hope, for saying that. And I think also to say, to put it in I statements, that's wonderful. You care about that. And the thing is, I found out, you know, I discovered, I heard, I learned that, don't say you're being duped, but say, you know, I learned actually from a former, you know, because we've had Harold Brown on our call, and I remember some of the stuff he told us. For example, you could, and this is true, Harold Brown, a former dairy operator, talked about how organically raised cows and dairies are not allowed, you can't give them any antibiotics. It's against the rules to give them antibiotics. So, if I found out that cows raised on dairies are not allowed to receive antibiotics, and so when they get mastitis, which is rampant on both organic and non-organic dairies, and their udders get inflamed, instead of giving them antibiotics, they mechanically ream out their teats on their udders, which is excruciatingly painful. And so actually animals on the local small-range organic farms very often suffer much more severely than animals in larger operations because they're not allowed to use antibiotics and other medications on them. They get various diseases of the skin. They can't use anything on them. So these animals are suffering enormously in ways that they wouldn't suffer normally. And to just say I learned all that and plant seeds, because the thing I think we have to remember is we can plant seeds, you know, and we can't actually change someone. I mean, it'd be nice if we could just get in there and just flip a few switches in their brain and say, okay, now we did it.
But right.
We can plant seeds. And I think that the skillful way to do it is, like you're saying, you know, to see, acknowledge them for what they're doing, and then say what I learned. And then just let it go, and then be an example too. If anyone else has any comments, but I think that's a great question. Thanks so much.
Yeah, Sarah. And Will, this is Hope. I just want to say I fully agree. You got to put it in the you're absolutely right, and I do know that and should be more thoughtful about that. It's true. You don't want to tell people what to do or you try and keep it personal to your experience. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing you can do, you can pull out my book and give it to them.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
That's what my book is for.
Yes, good.
Right.
I will. And then I think the message, too, that should be brought, like you said, should be broader and not that they're not ours to kill or use or exploit. Because, again,
absolutely.
I talk to vegetarians who say, I think killing animals is wrong. So like, yes, and using them is wrong too. So I think that broader message is what we need to keep saying.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you
thank
very much,
you so
both
much.
Of you, all of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
We've
you.
We've got one more question. Tara, you're...
Hi, Will.
Hi, Tara. Great, hi.
Hi. I hope really timely book. It's a book that needs to be read and needs to have reference material for all of that, so people can refer people to the right answers. Yeah, thank you. A couple of thoughts. You know, there's this almost inherent thought that animals are here for our comfort and they're supposed to die for us. You know, the actual thought that they're supposed to die for us and sort of a so what, you know, if they're allowed to live a life of comfort, then they die. They won't know. You know, I mean, I've heard this before. They won't know. It'll be quick and it'll be done and that's it. And then they'll just be this matter that we eat. So addressing that thought that animals are actually here for our comfort and to die for us, well, that's actually wrong thinking to begin with is also a good place to start.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I would love to read that missing chapter, so I look forward to the next iteration. I was wondering, maybe Will or Hope can address this. You know, right-thinking people, they look at a situation and they go, I think they do. I try to say, how would I feel if that happened to me? And then I weigh the results against whether I would actually do that or say that. You know, I try to do that. Unless it's something I feel very strongly about, sometimes I just barge in. But, you know, what is it when people, because of this betrayal position that they're put in, this perpetrator position, where they've disconnected so completely that they no longer ask that question, what is that loss? You know, what is that gap that's been created? Is that no conscience? Is there a psychological name for that disconnection of that stop not looking at what the results of their actions might be or putting themselves in that place? You know, is there a name for that?
I don't know. I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to go. I actually am supposed to be somewhere at 7, and I thought this was going to be finished by 6:30, and so I just drove to the location, and I've got to get in there. It's 5 minutes, and I'm supposed to be in the building at 7. I'm so, so sorry. I'm going to have to
run.
That's
fine.
No worries. Chat.
Perfect. I can address what Tara said, and then we can go from there. Thanks so much for joining us, Hope. It was perfect.
Thanks, everyone, so much. All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks. Yeah, just briefly, I think, if there's a psychological name for it, I'm not exactly sure other than it's normal, you know, in a sense, in our society and when it comes to animals. because we live in a herding culture that's based on essentially seeing certain animals as merely here for us to herd, to confine and kill for food. And so since we're raised in that culture, it's all around us, and we're eating it in these daily rituals that we are forced to participate in from the time we're little infants. It gets its talons into us, this way of seeing. It's a desensitization and a numbing, an ethical mm-hmm. numbing, a psychological and emotional numbing, so that we just don't feel anything. We're not capable of feeling. And so I think what veganism is about is sort of reawakening our sense of feeling and kindness and compassion and sensitivity and so forth to other living beings, which is naturally there. And we're allowed to obviously to feel it for certain animals like dogs and cats and horses. And it's so interesting to see this huge thing happening in Europe about their, you know, discovering that there's horse meat in the burgers and things, and how, you know, upset everybody is. It sort of exposes this split, this division within us. So, you know, you could call it perhaps schizophrenia of a certain type. You know, that's maybe not the right word exactly, but it's a deep, very deep psychological split that I think everybody suffers from. And it disempowers us, I think, enormously from actually making positive changes in our culture and in the world. And that's why I think what we're doing is so important, because it's actually healing at the deepest level of our own consciousness and realizing that other beings' experience of life is as important to them as ours is to us, and questioning all of this, the violence that is everywhere in our culture. And as we do this, we begin to just become, I think, a force field for positive change, even though it can be very difficult, because we suddenly find ourselves ejected in many ways out of the mainstream of our culture into the margins. You know, suddenly we're marginal. Now I'm a vegan, I'm on the margins. I'm not really, I look at everything almost as an outsider. And no one, you know, people, we become somewhat invisible in a certain sense. People think we're, there's something wrong with us or something.
It's almost like a criminal mentality. Yeah, it's like a criminal mentality. It's like, you know, if you're not in that crowd that's participating in the cruelty, then you're not one of them. You know?
Right.
And so
right.
You're not trusted sometimes. You know, I see that happening
right.
sometimes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's a very, it's a stressful situation, basically. And yet it's so fascinating to see that, for example, a study just came out recently that vegetarians and vegans are much less prone to depression and other mental illness than people who eat a standard American diet, which I can certainly see why that would be so. I mean, I think at a certain deeper level, we feel much more at peace with ourselves, and we begin to, you know, in the ways like we're doing on this call, reach out to other people, and we find more meaning and purpose in our lives. And so there's many reasons to really begin to celebrate at a much more, in a much more hearty way, you know, much more really feeling the benevolence of life, and we get more confidence in ourselves. And I think really there's a whole cascade effect of positive psychological and spiritual changes that happen once we go vegan, and once we say no to all this violence, even though some of our friends may leave us or our family members may not like it, and, you know, there's all this other stuff and stress that comes from that in relationships. From the people who are still basically indoctrinated into the herding culture, but the freedom that we begin to experience. And I think you were talking a little bit, Tara, about sort of a sensitivity that develops. I was wondering, actually, maybe I don't know if this a good time to say maybe just a couple words about that, because I was going to ask you tonight if you could say a couple words about that. I thought it was an interesting point that I wanted to share with everybody actually on the call. So do you want to maybe say a few words about that?
What I have discovered is that if you weren't already a sensitive human being, which you might have already been, because that might be why you chose veganism, is that I believe the very act of being a vegan rather opens up your consciousness and your physical and non-physical channels to make you even more sensitive. So it's sort of like, okay, so now you can see in the dark. Ah! So I can see in the dark, and it's pretty weird out there. So we really do need to support each other and to know that the things we're experiencing and just being able to share those kind of weird things that we do experience with this open and enhanced sensitivity. It's important. And some of the things I see, and, you know, I'm not saying it's all 100% true. Maybe it's, some of it is remnants of my own, you know, thought forms and patterns that have developed over the years as a meat eater. But some of the things that I see is, for instance, what Hope said earlier was a culture of manipulation and domination. Well, I experience these things in a very subtle manner, and if you're also a meditator, you might catch a glimpse of them. And you'll see cultures within cultures and societies within societies and ways of interacting with each other within the, you know, there's the gross and the subtle. And a lot of what's really going on, where the pedal hits the metal, as they say, is actually not in the gross world. What I see is that because we've enacted laws and we have certain ways of behaving in society and, you know, in the workplace and with our families that are acceptable, and we have to kind of follow along with those. But what I see is really running this world is in the subtle realms. And in the subtle realms, we're really still back in the Dark Ages. We're still in the time of pre-13th Amendment to the Constitution. We are acting and reacting as a result of the food that we're bringing into our body, and we're just emulating the experience of these animals. I see it so incredibly clearly. And I see it sometimes because it's enacted upon me, and I'm awake and aware, so I don't react, but I see it, and I'm just constantly amazed at, well, my God, that's exactly what the animals are experiencing in a test lab, you know? And here it is, it's a culture in this particular situation I'm in. Or that's exactly like imprisonment thought. You know, that's exactly the same kind of cultural schema or thought form or definition or structure that goes on in a prison or goes on in a factory farm or ends up in the, you know, the expulsion of a person from a particular part of society. So I guess what I'm saying is that, yes, this is still existing, and it's existing on a very, very strong level in the subtle realm, not just in the outward realm. It's not just all happening where you can address people on a face-to-face level. In our meditations and our thoughts and our inner being, kind of consciousness we project, it is so important to realize that there's some very old and archaic systems still in effect, and that's actually what's guiding people's actions, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
And do you concur that you see that as well? Trying to explain that to a non-vegan is a very difficult thing.
Thank you. I think you did a great job bringing that point out. That's really important. Yeah, beautiful. I want to just say, you know, I think what Tara did such a beautiful job expressing here is that our routine mistreatment of animals for food is something that we're eating it, but the vibratory reality of that, the suffering, the violence, the death, the misery, the imprisonment, the raping of these animals, you know, the domination and exploitation, is something it's happening at such a large level, and with something that we are all forced to participate in from the time of little kids, that I think as we go vegan and we become more sensitive, we realize that this is really driving at really very deep levels, psychologically and culturally, the kinds of problems that we're having. And so when we see people working hard to solve problems on the political level, which I think is important on one level, but without seeing, without changing the way we're eating, without changing the food, you know, I really think that we're not going to be successful, because we're actually living the outmoded, obsolete consciousness every day and reinforcing that. That's why this message, I think, is so important. And I'm so grateful that there are more and more people like you folks that are on the call that are helping to bring this, deepen this understanding, and bring this to more and more people. And I want to maybe a few more things here, but I noticed we have Mark Stroud with us on the call, and I wanted to just see, Mark, if you had anything, I know you can't stay the whole call, you wanted to share with everyone here about what's going on in with you in Cincinnati, and you're the very important part of the movement. You were the first one to have a World Peace Diet study group in Cincinnati, and things have never been the same since, I don't think, in Cincinnati. So if you could talk a little bit about what's happening, you know, the latest things, that'd be great. Are you there? Mark, can you hear me?
Hello, Will?
Oh, there you go.
Will?
Okay, good. Yeah, hi.
Okay,
yeah. Thanks.
Hello. Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And, well, it was wonderful to hear from Hope and her new book.
Yeah.
It's definitely an area that is becoming more and more prominent as more and more people become aware of what's going on in the world with other beings and other animals other than us human animals. And it's one of those things where it's many people, particularly in California, the general public are hearing these things, but for the most part, those kind of conversations, the humane conversations, are primarily going on amongst people who have some awareness already. And so it's important. And at the same time, I see how I went to a rock concert the other day, and to see 20,000 people there all screaming that they won't get fooled again, and to realize that they've been fooled all along. And it's pretty shocking to see that going on, and to know how much work that we all have. So I would encourage everyone on this call to really step it up, because we can use more and more engagement and involvement at a whole nother level than we've all been accustomed to. And I'm including myself, of course, in that company, because I'm seeing how important it is that more and more people hear this message, and particularly the spiritual aspect of it. I know that you were talking about how to define this denial, and I just Googled a lack of empathy and basically said, well, if you have a lack of empathy, you're essentially a psychopath. So
right.
Right. It's that there's a lot of work to be done.
Right.
And one of the great things that's happening here now is that we have the World Peace Yoga Studio, and twice a year we have a training where people come, and some of them are interested in becoming yoga teachers, or some of them are just more interested in deepening their personal spiritual practice in a structured environment with a group of people that they can just be in that adventure, that spiritual adventure, where they can look and learn and to experiment and to see what fits in a safe sanctuary environment. And it's always been primarily for people in this area, because it's a year-long training that takes place once a month. And in June of this year, we're actually offering a one-month intensive, so people can really set aside what's going on in their daily life for a month, come here to Cincinnati, and be engaged in a month-long spiritual intensive training. And without fail, what we've seen is that people go away feeling transformed and with great growth and in whatever their endeavors might be in their life, and particularly understanding the vegan message on a more deeper level. We have vegan cooking classes that I love to work with people with, and it's just an amazing opportunity. It's kind of like a spiritual camp for a month. So I encourage people to come to our website, World Peace Yoga, and look at that as a possibility. We're already starting to get people signed up for that. Really, the program starts in March because there's a lot of spiritual work that's being done before people actually come in June and get
right.
to enjoy 3 vegan meals a day. And, of course, one of the textbooks for our spiritual journey is the World Peace Diet. So we go deeply
wow.
into your book and with those discussions and understanding it on a deeper level. So it's a great opportunity. It's there are going to be a lot of guests, speakers, and we're loving to believe that you'll be one of them, of course. So
right.
we're really
yeah.
looking forward to that
yeah.
program, and that's happening this coming June. And of course,
so
we're already
like the month. Is that the month of June, more or less, or is it going into July, kind of? Or
it actually starts on the 5th of June, and it ends on the last day. I think the last day of June. The exact
right.
dates are on the website, of course. And
yeah.
so people will actually be living here for a month and really just engaged in deep spiritual work from pretty much 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night every day for a month. So.
Wow. Good for you. That sounds great. That'll be yoga and veganism, spirituality, meditation, looking at the big picture of our culture and taking time to kind of like go more deeply into understanding one's own process too. So that
yes.
sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And of course, we're already deeply engaged in planning next year's Jubilee, and already
right.
have quite a few requests for people that would like to sign up. We don't even have the registration up yet. We're already receiving emails. Where can I sign up? So this is our this is our 5th year, and it's always said that when you reach your 5th year, you've come of age. So this is our 5th year, big anniversary celebration of the Jubilee. So we've got a lot of special surprises in store and new people coming and new programs and new food on the menu and a lot more chefs, much more emphasis on food and some great music again this year. Of course, yoga for people who are interested in that. And we're going to focus more on meditation this year as well. So there'll be a meditation session every day, some days twice a day, and a labyrinth walk. And so it looks to be, once again, another wonderful 4-day celebration of how heaven on earth will look one day.
Right. Fantastic. And well, and as everybody knows, that's in October. So we'll be hearing more as we get closer to that too. All right, Mark. Well, thank you for joining us. And that's worldpeaceyoga. Is it .com? That your website?
.com. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yep. .com. Right. Yeah.
.com.
Great. Fantastic. All right. Thank you so much, Mark. Wow.
Sure. Thanks.
So, yeah, thanks. So we have all these possibilities people are creating. It's really, I have to say, over the years, seeing what Mark and Anna have been able to do in Cincinnati has been really inspiring. Starting out with just deciding to do a World Peace Diet study course and creating the city council, having all kinds of passing a resolution, and the ripples have been radiating out for years from the work that they're doing there, and it's great to see it happening. And I agree with what you said, Mark, too, that it's time for all of us to step it up. if we I think it's we're really entering times of massive change. I think we can all feel it in our bones what's happening on the planet with humanity and animals, and the reality of global climate change, the reality of world hunger and economic collapse, the inequality of the economic system, and realizing that really in many ways underneath all of this is this mentality of ownership of other living beings and dominating, exploiting them and eating them and teaching our kids to do that, that's really the driving force underneath it. Until we address that, I think we are still deceiving ourselves. And so it was really great to hear from Terry Beer in Hawaii about the article that I wrote, which is basically, I guess, making that point as clearly as I could, because I see this on every side, from the most progressive to the conservative to the spiritual, and all the different teachers. I named a few of them by name, but I think, you know, the idea is to just realize that this is something that we all, that transcends all the differences, and that we can talk to people, whether they're whatever religion they are or non-religion they are or wherever they are on the political spectrum, that this indoctrination, this program, this cultural violence of eating animal foods is so pervasive, and it's something that anyone can actually address, and to do it in a way where we're not blaming people, but helping them to understand that it's not in their best interest to go along with this, to allow themselves to be simply programmed like a robot to do things that are against their own health, against the happiness of themselves and their loved ones and their children. And that I think that is the perspective I found, anyway, that seems to work with pretty much everyone, because there's nothing to fight against. You know, we're not trying to fight with people. The idea is to help all of us to understand at a deeper level the roots of our dilemmas. And so I think this is really the key to what we're all about here. And I did see that one of our members, Veronique, in Los Angeles, made a comment. I won't read the whole thing, but just the summary of her comment, she typed it in on the computer, is that she says, "I so agree with all of you that animals are not here for us. They're here for their own reasons. As long as people are convinced that they need to eat animal flesh in their diet to survive, then that's part of the problem, and they won't want to change." So, and then she goes on to say that, so we must also not only talk about animal rights, we have to also explain to people that we don't have any biological need to eat animals, because if people think that we need to eat animals to get enough protein or whatever it is, B12 or calcium or omega-3s, then all of our arguments usually will fall on deaf ears, because they'll say, "Look, you're crazy. If I don't eat it, I'm going to be sick, and I don't want to be sick, or I don't want to die." So So there is an aspect. That's one of the reasons when I first saw Forks Over Knives, Madeline and I were actually, a year before the movie came out, we saw the movie in the director's living room in Los Angeles, and we wanted to know what we thought. And we said, "Well, you know, it doesn't talk at all about animal rights." But as I reflected on it, I realized that it was very helpful, because it really serves a purpose of clearly demonstrating that we do not need animal foods of any kind to be healthy, and in fact, we'll be just as healthy, probably actually quite a bit healthier without them. And that is a fundamental prerequisite, I think, to the whole thing. It's important, I think. I mean, there are some great souls who give up eating animal foods, go vegan, and say, "Well, you know, maybe I'll die. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, I'm not going to cause the suffering." And I think that's fantastic. But when we have examples, like I was so lucky when I was at the farm to see almost basically 900 people thriving on a plant-based diet, that was the evidence that all I needed. And so I'd love to see us creating more vegan communities, physical communities, as well as groups like Mark has in Cincinnati, and a lot of you are doing as well, by networking and having monthly meetings or weekly meetings or bi-monthly meetings or internet meetings or meetups. It's really great to see this kind of activity happening. So let's see, we're getting actually close to our time. It's amazing how the time flies by. Steve, you have your hand up. Go ahead. Sorry. Steve, are you there? Do you have a comment or? Maybe not. Okay, let me see here.
Hello? Oh, sorry. I don't think I was coming through.
Okay, now you're coming through.
Yeah. It was just a quick comment, because when Mark was mentioning about a rock concert, it brought to mind something we're having in the next magazine. We have it under the What's Hot section. I don't know if you've heard about Morrissey. He was a singer of the Smiths, and he's putting on a concert.
Right.
Did you hear about this?
Well, go ahead and tell everybody, because not everybody probably didn't hear about it.
Well, the news is he's playing, I mean, I'm not a big fan of his music, but I love what he's doing. He's putting on a concert in the first of the month coming up here at Staples Center in L.A., and it's going to be the first concert where he's requested that all the food in the venue has to be vegan, and they're banning McDonald's. Like, they're closing down all the McDonald's in the Staples Center as well, and Paul McCartney tried to have this done, and they didn't allow it, and they're allowing it. This is the first time that's happening. So that's kind of exciting.
Well, actually, yeah, that is exciting, although I heard that was the original news that came out, but then apparently the Staples Center decided that was not going to happen, and that they are offering a wide variety of vegan foods, but that they are not willing to deny people who want to eat meat the option to eat meat. So they are serving meat.
Oh.
Yeah. Initially that's what they said, but then I'm not sure what happened. But now the latest news is that there will be meat served. So, you know, for people who want it, Staples Center said it's just not an option, that we're not going to let people eat meat if that's what they want to eat, because we're here to make happy customers, and we're not going to do that. But it is a great breakthrough in the sense that they're really bringing in a lot of special chefs and to create a lot of vegan and vegetarian options, especially vegan options, because that's what he's wanted. But there will be meat for people who want meat, unfortunately. And it goes against Morrissey. Morrissey said, well, all right. You know, he said it was still a victory that they're getting all this vegan food. So it's kind of ended up being somewhat of a compromise. But still, something like that, for sure.
Okay, definitely not as exciting as I thought.
Not quite, yeah. Sometimes that's how it is. but thanks. It's definitely a step in the right direction. Thanks, Steve. Let's see. We have, Kerry, do you want to speak?
Hi, Will.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. I just want to say thank you for you. Thank you for the message. Thank you for opening our awareness. The one connection that I really, really, really has hit me to my soul is that being vegan, unless, like you said, unless we realize what we're doing to the animals, because what we're doing to the animals right now, right here, right now, the world is doing to each other, and it's going to overpower us if we don't wake up.
Right.
And it's so crucial. I mean, this has happened through the millenniums of, revolutions and power and destruction and creation and whatever. But don't we get it right? Don't we eventually get it right? Don't we evolve instead of constantly go through the recycle mill?
That's what we're working on here. I think that's maybe why we all came to this planet at this time, you know, is to try to roll up our sleeves and help out here. And the first step is to take get the program out of our own consciousness. It's, even if we go vegan, we still have a lot of work to do. You know, it's an ongoing process. Yeah, that's it. But it's beautiful, I think, to actually realize this and begin to purify our consciousness and to live as kindly and compassionately and aware, as with as much awareness as we can, and it gets better. I think it does get better, and I do think ultimately it's inevitable that veganism will triumph.
Oh, I'm trusting you with your knowingness to spread that, and I have never felt the compassion or the passion or the purpose as much about. I even had kids, and I never felt this strongly about anything. this is to creating, you know, a world that for all beings to be free.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. That's the beauty, I think, really, of this whole understanding, is we're not just protesting against bad things. There's actually this fantastic understanding that we can, each one of us, as Gandhi said, it sounds trite to say it, but we can be the change we want to see right now, and there's nothing stopping us as individuals or as a culture from a massive transformation. It's just really at hand. As Jesus said, you know, the kingdom is at hand. We are the ones, and the key is to keep questioning. I think questioning is the most important thing. Question everything. You know, question the news, question the medical establishment, question the scientists, you know, question everything. And I think we have to use our intuition, learn to quiet our minds and tune into the heart knowing. And I think from that position, we'll begin to see our right relationship with the earth, with animals, with other people, and with our life and what we're here for. It's a very brief time. It goes by so quickly. And how do we spend our time? What's the most effective important thing we can be doing with our time? And each one of us, I think that's something we have to decide in our own heart. But the beauty is, I think, is that we can be examples on some level for other people. And we can let our own, as Thoreau said, let our own life be a weight against an unjust system, and in favor of a system that is evolving, where we come into compassion for all life. And I think perhaps in the past we had enlightened societies on this planet. I mean, there's massive evidence through cross-cultural mythologies of a golden age that was sort of mythically lost. So I think we don't really even know what happened in the past necessarily, but whatever that is, the future that's beckoning, I think, is what we want to focus on. And so that's what I really love about what you're saying, Terry. You know, what you're talking about is this awakening of passion that gives you something to look forward to, something to do that's positive. I think
Now, Will, if you could only bottle some of your patience and peace and balance, send it to me, okay? And
right. Like on the Wizard of Oz, I give you a certificate, and then you've got it.
Well, Bob, bless you, and thank you for being you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for calling in. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. We're really getting there's more I would like to do. Sometimes when we have guests, it takes up a lot of our time, but I think it was a really excellent guest we had. Hope was wonderful. We'll probably forego having a guest maybe next time, and we can get more into some of the material I'd like to share. I do want to mention that Madeline and I are touring. In 2013, we're mainly on the West Coast. We're going up to Canada. We get one of our, actually two of our multi-site facilitators, Christine and John McLaren up in Victoria, are setting up a wonderful program up there with music and art and lectures on the World Peace Diet and intuition and all, workshop and all these things. And so if you're anywhere on the West Coast, let me know. We'd love to work together. We'll be going on to L.A. area as well as in Central California and all over the place. And I'll be flying a few times here and there as well. And then in 2014, we're planning on touring to the East Coast. And so anyway, if you are interested in working together in your area, let me know. Love to do that. And just don't forget to check your February 2013 resources. I really love doing this throughout the month. I put together articles and websites that I think are helpful, and there's a whole, I think, in many ways, a goldmine of information here. I do have on here something that comes up quite often on the first page. People ask about vegan doctors. You know, I wish my doctor was vegan, or my health professional, whoever it is. So there's two websites right now that I know of. Butterflies Cats has one called Vegan Health Professionals, and Colleen Patrick-Goudreau has one, Vegan Wellness Practitioners. So if you know anyone who needs guidance in some ways or second opinion when the doctor says, well, you need to eat meat to be healthy or something like that, these are good resources. Some of my recent articles and videos and interviews are there at the beginning. And then there's quite a few fascinating articles here that I won't go into them, but there's a lot there. There's so much happening in the whole world of the vegan evolution and revolution. It's touching people everywhere. We're seeing it in articles in all over the world, in research, in discussions about everything from human mental health to environment to global climate change to overfishing and to the consciousness of animals and just health on every level. I mean, it's just something that I think is just a wave that is building pretty much every single day. And so I want to just encourage all of us to do what we can to stay abreast of everything. I think that's almost a full-time job in itself. But not only that, to make sure we take time every day to quiet our minds and connect with the inner radiant peace of our own being, and to see the beauty of the sun and the moon and the stars and the wind and the rain, the clouds, the trees, the birds, the beautiful human beings also, who are fundamentally, we're flowing radiant beings. I think we've been born into a culture that slams a lot of that down, and we end up acting out the traumas that come from that. But I think more and more of us are realizing that we don't have to do that, that we're strong enough and resilient enough to recreate our own life and help our culture recreate its life. And so please keep staying informed, both on the outer level and I think even more importantly on the inner level, where the true wisdom is. And Madeline and I send you all our love. We will definitely be staying in touch throughout the next 4 weeks until the next meeting that we have. If you know anyone that might like to be part of the World Peace Diet Circle or the facilitator training or the mastery program, of course, please let them know. And the next meeting we're going to be having will be basically a month from now. This is the 21st of February, and on the 21st of March is the third Thursday. So we'll look forward to talking then. I want to thank, of course, a special thank you to Hope for joining us, a special thank you also to Steve for doing such a great job coordinating all these thousands of details to make sure that this all works. And I want to especially thank all of you for being not only with us here at this time in space, but for being here on this planet and for loyally remembering the mission of your heart and doing what you can to help fulfill that. Because I think all of us, as we remind each other and as we make the efforts in our own lives to purify our own consciousness and to live our lives as expressions of kindness and compassion, we reconnect with the fundamental sanity and health of our true nature, and we begin to build a movement that's blessing the world more and more. So we'll definitely stay in touch, and we look forward to being together in March. Let me know if you have anything you'd like to specifically address. We have the forums, and we have new people there. It's always good to check in on the forums, and I know we're all really busy, but if you have a chance, we can continue on some of the discussions there as well. Much love to you all. And look forward to next time. Be well, be safe, be happy, be free, and be blessed. Much love. Thanks again for joining us.